And now, the moment of truth, tasting and judgment to decide the world's best chef. On the panel, former Prime Minister Yutaro Hashimoto, actress Yoshiko Mita, actor Tatsuo Umemiya, Hong Kong gourmet Chua Lam, and culinary critic Asako Kishi.
Nothing bad will come from him, ever.
Even deeper, I feel...
Feel it?
Yes.
The skin is a bit thicker.
Ah, the skin on this.
It's good, isn't it?
So good.
Normally, you might hesitate to eat something like this, right?
He didn't try to manipulate the flavors, except for the butter he applied later as a finish.
I don't need the meat.
It turned into a cream soup in my mouth. A cream soup, Japanese flavored.
Yeah. When I was watching him make the sauce, I was wondering how it would taste. But it's so good.
Right now, I just feel relieved.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. What a fun birthday I had. I've got to say, man, logging into Facebook on your birthday is one of the coolest things in the world now. I think close to 80 to 90% of the people that I'm friends with on Facebook wished me a happy birthday. And it was really nice to see that. I was really overwhelmed. Every time I signed on, I'd see that. Had a lot of gratitude that day. Had a really great day. Debbie Lee, we had dinner with Debbie Lee at Soultown Tapas, and she just pulled out all the stops, made me special treats, gave me a little slice of birthday cake, even sang happy birthday to me, which it was overwhelming. I just can't put it into words. I had a great day. I got some great things that I can share with you. Katrina bought me a deli slicer, so I can slice my bacon now. None of this slicing this stuff by hand with a huge sushi knife. So that's fun. I was really looking forward to not having to do that anymore. And now I don't have to. And my friends Bob and Andrew, who I started my birthday with early on Friday, gave me a gift that is going to be the next featured video for My Life as a Foodie. And it's not what you might think it is. Coming very soon. You can look for it. Some of you might be shocked, appalled, when you see what's coming next, but you knew it had to come to this point. And I have been saying for a long time, sooner or later, I was going to do something like this. That's all I'm going to say. So look forward to that. We're talking with Martin Reed of I Love Blue Sea shortly. I found out about this guy through my friend Charles from 100 Miles. Charles heard the segment I played last time about the restaurant in Washington that is serving only sustainable fish. And he realized that, he recently had met Martin, and Martin runs a sustainable seafood business. So introduces us. I set up an interview with him, and we're going to be talking with him coming up. I think it's something we all should think about at least a little bit right now. If we're going to continue to eat from the sea the rest of our lives, we've got to start to understand and think about the impact that fishing is having right now. And maybe try to take part in those species that aren't threatened, those that can continue to replenish. So more about that in a bit. All right, so listen, you guys know that I'm a crazy sports nut. I wake up to it. I go to bed to it. I think and read about it all day, practically. I love sports about as much as I love food. This is great. Hank Azaria, you know him. He's an actor, voiceover guy. He does a lot of work, does a lot of voices on The Simpsons. He develops this character, this baseball broadcaster named Jim Brockmeyer. and they made this phony short documentary about Jim Brockmeyer for funnyordie.com. And it's about how popular he was, his legend, and how he set the standard for sports center anchors and pop culture references. And they told this story of his downfall from the sport. And it featured Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen, Joe Buck. Really well done, very, very funny. And it showed a lot of clips from Major League Baseball games. And while he's doing his voiceover work, they're showing these clips. Well, of course, you know, Major League Baseball gets their panties in a wad every time somebody shows their stuff without permission. And they took the video offline. But not before I got my greasy hands on it, and I ripped the damn thing to a video file. So I saved it. And because if you look online, it's called Game Changers. You might find it on a few sites. Funny or Die had to take it down. A couple other sites were hosting it. They had to take it down too. But go search for it. I swear to you, it's the funniest thing in the world. But I have to share some of this with you because it's so funny, and I think this would make a really funny movie if they ever thought of pursuing this. Now, bear with me. I know it's not about food. It's about sports. But I'm not playing the whole thing either. I just want to give you enough just to kind of give you a gist of the whole thing. And then we'll get to food shortly.
I think if you ask any baseball fan when it comes to great announcers, they're going to mention Ernie Harwell, Jack Buck, Vin Scully. But if you ask broadcasters, they're probably going to, a man, say Jim Brockmeyer.
You cannot fill out a top five without mentioning Brockmeyer.
Jim Brockmeyer, hands down.
Oh, you can stick me in some kind of Italian boat because that one is gondola.
We hear about people being old school. Jimmy was old school.
He always wore that same plaid jacket, always had that same red tie.
Fresh cut flower in the lapel. Take me out to the ball game at the top of his lungs.
I mean, Brockmeyer's style was ahead of its time. All that stuff we did back on the day in Sports Center, throwing in cultural references, catchphrases from movies. I mean, we were ripping Brockmeyer off left and right.
Nifty Graham fires over to second, and you complete me. And that misses for ball four, and Robinson says, I'm walking here. I'm walking here.
He loved The Godfather.
2-3 references a game.
Here comes the 0-2. And, oh, Michael Corleone says hello. So, folks, 2 outs, bottom of the fourth. Barzini's a pimp, could never have outfought Santino. That one could be trouble. Spine giving chase, so is Young. And, oh, look how they massacred my boy.
Some of the references were so out there.
Oh, man, the way Vasquez is going, Mama better make some more of that moist cake. Oh, Wilmer Valderrama, that must have hurt.
It's like, what the hell is he talking about?
So there are a lot of different versions of this story that have gone around in circles.
He was going to the ballpark and then realized he had forgotten his lucky scorekeeper's pen.
And so he turned his car around, went back home.
He opens a door and there's Lucy on the kitchen floor with another guy.
And there's just these indelible moments in sports. Kobe getting 81 against Toronto. The O.J. Bronco chase.
And without a doubt, Jim Brockmeyer's cheating wife game.
So Morales having himself a great season. Wouldn't be at all surprised if my wife had her lips wrapped around his Johnson at some point. Oh, that one's way back. I can't see the ball. It's either out of here or lost inside my wife's big, fat, cheating vagina.
It was sad.
So we'll go to the top half of the f***ing whore. F*** you, bitch. Now, why don't you calm down, Steve? You didn't just see some guy's balls disappear inside your wife. Good Lord.
Plain and simple, Jimmy Brockmeyer had a breakdown on the air.
Come on, join in. Take your c*** out of my wife's c***.
So Brockmeyer got fired, obviously.
He was gone. There's no coming back from that. But he's an announcer, and that's what they do. They announce.
Hey, that just hit me. That's a kind of cheesy, beefy feel to it. Reminds me, this poop is brought to you by Antonio's Pizzeria. Brockmeyer, one of the few back-to-front wipers in the league. Very, very unconventional. Okay, dabbing at it. First likes to dab at it. That ball is well hit. Knock, knock. Who's there? Mr. Baseball. Mr. Baseball who? Mr. Baseball went and got himself out of here.
Okay, Martin Reed runs ILoveBlueSea.com. It's an online source for sustainable seafood, and he's kind enough to join us today. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Hey, tell us about I Love Blue Sea. What is it, and how long have you been doing this?
Sure. ILoveBlueSea.com has been open for a little over a month now. We sell only sustainable seafood, and it's all sushi quality fresh. So you don't have to eat it as sushi, but that's how fresh you want your seafood to be.
Wow, great. So the seafood you sell on your site is sushi quality, meaning we can eat it raw. When it comes delivered to our house, we can eat it raw with no risk of illness.
Right. All of our seafood is as fresh as you can get it. We ship overnight from our warehouse in San Francisco, anywhere in the lower 48 states. So you could be on a farm in North Dakota and enjoy some super fresh oysters that, you would get it at a seafood restaurant in San Francisco.
Wow. Have you been in the fish business for a long time? Is this something that you've been doing for a while?
I haven't. This is my first foray into the seafood business. I got started on this whole project last year. I grew up in the Bay Area and love seafood. If it's fresh enough, you know, I love to eat it raw. And I moved down to Tucson, Arizona for college. And it was sort of a wake-up call realizing that I definitely couldn't get the same selection and quality that I had grown accustomed to. And I realized that, you know, certainly the rest of the landlocked states probably had the same issue. And when I really started looking into, was this a problem I could solve, I realized just how much trouble the oceans were in and really how necessary sustainable seafood is if we're going to sort of shift course away from the utter destruction of the oceans that we're currently headed towards.
Now, for those of my listeners who don't know what sustainable seafood is, sustainable seafood is any seafood species that can either maintain or increase its numbers in the future without putting more stress on the environment. Did I get that right, Martin?
Exactly, and it's caught or farmed in an environmentally friendly way. So it's not necessarily farmed or wild. There's lots of different variables that play into the equation of whether a particular species is sustainable. And to be honest, it's kind of confusing for the average consumer to go into a restaurant or a supermarket and attempt to buy seafood that is sustainable. So really what I'm trying to do is make it easy for consumers to still enjoy seafood and to do so without, you know, this terrible burden of deciphering whether or not it's sustainable.
What are some examples of seafood species that would be considered sustainable?
There's lots of them. Oysters and mussels and clams. Shellfish are usually farmed in the ocean, and they're actually good for the ocean. All sorts of fish, crab, shrimp, depending on where you get it. You definitely want to avoid shrimp coming out of most third world countries, because it decimates the environment and it's also detrimental to your health. They pour tons of chemicals and antibiotics in there. So there's tons of offerings. You're not really going to miss too many things by making this sustainable seafood.
I know we've talked about this a lot before. I know we've seen a lot of overfishing. We've been told stories of Japanese fishermen fishing so hard that they're gone for up to 4 months at a time, fishing the Pacific so deep as far as South America. How did we get to this point? How did things get this bad?
You know, humans have been fishing for thousands of years, and in the last 50 years, you know, we've fished out 90% of, the large predatory fish. And really, it's a combination of a growing population and the technology to go further, fish deeper, and get more fish.
Are you saying that basically we should be staying the hell out of any sushi restaurant that doesn't serve sustainable species?
Yeah, or go to sushi restaurants and only order what you know to be sustainable. There's, you know, three sushi restaurants that I know of that are currently selling only sustainable sushi, which is awesome, and I'd love to see more get on board.
Outside of bluefin tuna, which of course we know is number one, we've read a lot about being endangered, what are the other species that are in danger of growing to the point of extinction?
Sure. So definitely stay away from bluefin tuna. Unagi is a really popular, you know, item at sushi restaurants. You know, really, it's because it's covered in this sweet sauce. It's really the texture that consumers enjoy. And there's a ways to get around it. The Taki restaurant in San Francisco uses black cod. And with their sweet sauce, it tastes very similar to unagi. And, you know, it's using a species that's sustainable. Also, octopus. Those are the top three that, you know, on the top of my head that people should definitely avoid. Farm salmon, let me add that to the list. Farm salmon is very, very harmful to the environment. They farm them in these huge pens, like a million fish in these pristine inlets of British Columbia, for example. and they just pump the fish full of, you know, chemicals, antibiotics. The fish escape and actually breed and compete with the wild salmon. Salmon, please cross that off your list for sure.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you that I'd read that in Chile they've had great success in farming salmon, and I was going to ask you about that, but you just answered that question for me. My friend Nathan, who has a new show debuting on PBS this month, Growing a Greener World, he said he doesn't like the idea of farm-raised fish because he sees it as cruelty to animals. But, you know, I disagree with him that I didn't think it was any crueler than these fish swimming around in an empty ocean starving to death. Farm-raising fish isn't really cruelty to animals, is it?
Yeah, there's definitely humane ways to raise fish and healthy ways for, you know, humans and the environment. Last year was actually a pivotal year. It was the first time in the history of the world that people consumed more farmed seafood than wild seafood. And I think really, you know, we don't need to be scared of aquaculture, as it's called. We need to embrace it, really. The population's booming. We cannot feed, you know, 6-7 billion people with wild seafood. We're going to have to rely on aquaculture, you know, from here on out. And as long as we do it responsibly, I'm all for it.
I read a report last year that said that the average Japanese person consumes approximately 70 kilos of fish per year. Now, I'm looking at the ocean on the World Atlas, and there's a lot of water here. Now I'm being told that these waters will someday be empty?
Yeah, that's definitely the risk we run, and what a frightening outcome that would be.
It is shocking. Now, if the current state of commercial fishing continues the way it's going now, do you honestly think that we will physically run out of fish to eat from the ocean in our lifetime?
It's definitely a possibility. In our lifetime, will we see all fish gone? I don't know. I think we'll definitely see some of the bigger species. And, you know, the ocean is a delicate ecosystem like Earth, like all of Earth. And if we start removing some species that taste really good, I think that could be catastrophic for the ocean as a whole.
Right. Like, they had an abalone ban on our coast for a while, and I don't know how effective that was, but do you think it would be feasible to halt commercial fishing for a while, maybe to allow the sea to replenish, or perhaps put limits on the totals of commercial catches?
Sure. So a commercial fishing ban entirely would be almost impossible, and I think it would put a lot of people out of work, which wouldn't be a good thing. I think if we required people, commercial fisheries to act responsibly, that's really in their best interest. If they want to be fishing in 10, 20 years, they need to be start making, you know, responsible decisions that'll allow the fish that they're catching to continue to reproduce. So I think it would be beneficial to put certain areas of the ocean where fish are known to breed, put those off limits to fishing, put more strict regulations on the types of fishing gear that they use. Yeah, really just give the fish a fighting chance.
Are there differences in flavor and nutritional value when you're talking farm-raised fish compared to wild-caught?
You know, that's a good question you raised. I've done some research on that, and it definitely depends on the species. It's very species specific. So there's certain types of wild fish that you're best to avoid because of high mercury, and there's certain types of farm seafood that you'd want to avoid because of the way that they're raised. So I mentioned earlier, shrimp coming out of you know, India or Vietnam or Thailand, not only do they, you know, decimate these mangrove areas to put their farms in, but they pump them so full of a myriad of different chemicals that you're really putting your own health at risk by eating it.
Wow. So what different varieties of seafood do you carry at I Love Blue Sea?
We have a big selection. We currently have 50 products, and we're expanding every day. We'd like to be sort of the one-stop shop where you can go to get all these sorts of fresh and varied seafood. I encourage people to try new different types of seafood. If you've only had salmon and tuna and shrimp your whole life, there's lots of other great stuff to try. So we have whole fish. We'll fillet it for you. We have crab, shrimp, all sorts of clams and mussels and oysters. And then we have some more exotic shellfish like abalone and gooey duck and sea urchin roe, also known as uni in sushi shops.
Well, that sounds awesome, man. You know, sometimes there are seasons for certain types of or certain species of fish and seafood. I would assume this holds true for sustainable seafood, too. Are there species that are only available at certain times of the year?
Definitely. Yeah, you know, we like to encourage people to eat with the seasons. You know, enjoy local halibut for a few months and then, you know, wait until next year to enjoy it again. So we love to showcase seasonal seafoods, encourage people to mix it up and try new things.
Sweet. So I go on your site, I order some fish, and all orders are shipped via FedEx overnight, right?
Correct.
And they're shipped with ice packs and stuff?
Yep. We use all eco-friendly packaging materials. So we're not going to ship it in styrofoam, which ironically ends up in the ocean usually. We'll ship it overnight. So if you order, we ship Monday through Thursday. So you'll get it Tuesday through Friday. We ship FedEx overnight anywhere in the U.S. It's all sushi quality fresh. If you've never had it before, I recommend you try it. It's delicious, really.
Now, do you guys do any fishing yourselves, or do you buy from vendors and sell their fish?
I like to ship fish for myself just as a hobby, but... No, we buy from fishermen and sell to you.
Now, are you running any specials right now that you'd like to promote here?
Sure, we got all sorts of good stuff going on. We have fresh sardines. If you've never had fresh sardines, you've only had canned sardines. It's the difference between Taco Bell and Mexican food. It's a world of difference. It tastes like a completely different species. We have whole squid, which is awesome for making your own calamari. Five or six different types of oysters, which are all amazing. Oysters, much like wine, have different tastes depending on where they come from and the waters. We've got Dungeness crab meat, which, in my opinion, is the best crab meat. And we sell it in one-pound tubs, and you can use it for any of your favorite crab recipes or just eat it out of the tub. It's that good.
I saw the greatest thing on your site. It was a sardine over a little ball of rice. It was sushi. It was a little ball of rice there. And... are people actually scaling these things, and you eat them with the bones in and everything, right?
Yeah, you can definitely cook sardines whole, and that's how I like to cook them. If you feel like putting a little more work in, you can definitely fillet them, too, and eat them on top of rice or just plain.
Great. Martin, this is fantastic. I really like your approach to sustainable seafood. I find it responsible, and it's an option for us who are conscious about the environment and sustainability. And for there to be fish for our grandkids when they get to be our age, I think it's something we really need to look hard at. And from the looks of your site, it appears your prices are pretty damn reasonable.
Thank you. Yeah, we try and make it very affordable and easy for people to support sustainable seafood. We really want this to be the way that people get their seafood from now on. I mean, really, like you said, it would suck to have to tell our grandkids what fishing was like. And this is, we have the opportunity now to be the generation that doesn't let, you know, the oceans just fall apart and change the direction we're headed and start returning the health of to our oceans. And eating sustainable seafood is one of the best ways you can do it.
I want to encourage all of you to give ilovebluesea.com a shot. The next time you're planning a meal that involves seafood, there are options there for you that don't involve overfishing our waters. Martin, thanks, man.
Thanks for having us, Phil. I appreciate it.
In the shadow of high-rises, a garden of greens, turnips, broccoli, and something called callaloo, or Jamaican spinach.
So do you cook them or what?
What we do is we prepare them for cooking.
Or you put them in a salad?
No, we cook them.
Really?
We can do salad too.
Here too, once a week on Wednesdays, small family farmers sell their produce.
You don't have to go to Canada for greenhouse cucumbers anymore. You can go right to Homestead.
It's absolutely delicious.
This is Overtown, smack in the middle of downtown Miami. A supermarket? Not around here. In a unique way, this farmer's market fills that void. Here, Eddie Stewart can use cash or his EBT card, known as food stamps, to fill his bag with fruits and vegetables.
It's homegrown, it's fresh, more fresh than anything else. You understand? Well, you can't beat that.
And you can't beat the prices. For every dollar in food stamps,
21 work, 21 good.
21 is good.
You get $2 worth of produce, even exotic fruits like loquat.
I don't know. What does it taste like? You're the chef.
Mm.
Some are more sweet.
It's like a cross between an apple, a melon, and a kiwi.
This subsidized market is the brainchild of Chef Michel Nishan. There are more than 100 now open around the country, funded by donations and money from Nishan's foundation. The idea? Give small family farmers an outlet for their locally grown produce. Try tamarind.
You're eating the flesh, which is around the seed.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So think Worcestershire.
Mm. Most importantly, this market provides fresh food at an affordable price to communities where access to groceries is limited.
When you provide the access and the resources both, miracles happen. It's pretty cool.
You can pick up the Overtown Cookbook here, too.
Here we have a dessert. This is a mango banana smoothie.
Ooh.
With granola.
Oh, I like that a lot. Students at the neighborhood's Booker T. Washington High produced the book using recipes from home, but substituted healthy ingredients.
Instead of you using molasses for you to sweeten up your food, you can use things like honey, apple juice.
In this neighborhood, the seeds of healthy eating have definitely taken root. John Zarella, CNN, Miami.
So we went to Ludo Bites 4.0 at Graham and Pappas in L.A. This was on Saturday, the 24th of April, so it was a while back. Ludo really is starting to resemble, to me anyway, starting to resemble Heston Blumenthal from The Fat Duck in England. And I only say that because I'm starting to see how Ludo is taking this unique approach to seeing what he can do with ingredients that you're used to having in common forms, but he'd like to take them out of those common forms and play with them a little bit. And he's using molecular gastronomy techniques too. Not a lot, but, you know, in the same vein that Jason Foolilove was doing it in Da Vinci. Kind of like that. So some of the things that we had the tartine plate, which is a warm, crispy, salty baguette. And that was served with two little bowls. One of them had honey lavender butter, and the other one had smoked lard. Honey lavender butter was like butter, but it tasted like a fresh bath. You know, that sounds weird. It was something else. It was great. I couldn't stop eating it. And smoked lard. I mean, who doesn't like fat? Fat's awesome, but smoky fat, it's even more awesome. Then he made a brie chantilly Napoleon with a honeycomb, frise salad, and a balsamic glaze. Brie chantilly is basically a little slice of a baguette, and it's topped with brie that's been whipped for 2 hours by hand. That's what the server told us. 2 hours by hand whipping brie, and it's light and fluffy, and it tastes like brie, and it's just freaking amazing. Rich, it's, I tell you, everything that you taste when it comes to tapas, it's always just got really powerful flavor, and it's rich. You don't have to eat a ton of food, which is what's great about tapas. You eat small bites with lots of flavor, and you get a lot of bang for your buck. And I think that's what this is about. There were a lot of things we didn't have. We didn't have the Burgundy escargot that everyone was talking about. We didn't have the Boudin Noir mousse. He had a seared foie gras pina colada. I don't even know what that looks like. And then, of course, he made the foie gras croque monsieur, which is a terrine of foie gras that's served in a sandwich where the bread is actually soaked in squid ink, and then it's toasted. And we've had that before. We've talked about it, but he brought it back. Some of the other things that we did have, we had marinated king salmon with German butterball potato, red wine vinaigrette, and creme fraiche. That was great. That tasted like a Swedish pickled salmon, you know, a cured salmon. Well, he cured it for a couple of days, and this was fresh Alaskan king salmon. It was awesome. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, when you taste really fresh fish, it doesn't taste like you're used to having it. Another thing, and this is a good example, we had snapper ceviche with heirloom tomato, jalapenos, red onions, a Meyer lemon paste, and olive oil. Snapper, in general, I've had snapper that tasted like fishy fish, and that was not good snapper. It was not fresh. This stuff was fresh, and, you know, in ceviche, it's only cooked by the citrus. So if this stuff wasn't fresh, it would reek. And it was not anything like that. It was fantastic. And again, you know how I am. I'm a whore for ceviche anyway. And that's the other thing about Ludo. If it says it's got jalapeno in it, you can expect to be lifted out of your pants. Jalapenos, and the reason why when I make anything that has jalapeno in it, because I'm always sensitive about burning people, you know, in their mouth, is that I'll usually core them out, get the seeds out, get the veins out. So there's a taste of jalapeno, but it really doesn't rip you up. Because jalapeno, in general, can really do some damage. People don't think about it, but a jalapeno pepper is pretty damned hot. And the younger they are, the hotter they are. And that's what I found. The smaller those peppers are, it's like getting bit by a rattlesnake. If you get bit by an adult rattlesnake, you still have time to get to the doctor. But get bit by a young one, and that venom is so powerful, I mean, it'll stop your heart in a hurry. So if you get bit by a young rattlesnake, get your ass to the doctor fast. It's the same thing with a jalapeno. If it's small, prepare to die. So, and that's good. You want that. You're eating ceviche. It's Mexican. You want a little flash in a pan. So I ate the jalapeno, and it was awesome. The other things that we had a squid carbonara with pancetta, poached egg, Parmesan snow, and chive flowers. Basically, squid carbonara means there was no pasta in this dish. It was squid, long little pieces of calamari that was kind of shaped like pasta with pancetta, which was delicious. And then a poached egg at 63 degrees. Now, I only assume that means he took an egg and put it in a immersion circulator and cooked it in a water bath at 63 degrees. And again, those are those molecular gastronomy techniques. Wiley Dufresne, WD-50, that type of stuff. I think it's great that he's doing this. Parmesan snow, I can only assume, you know, he took a big chunk of Parmesan and shredded it so finely that they were coming down like snowflakes. The other thing we had was steak arpois with shallots, polenta bone marrow, and a roasted eggplant puree. Perfect steak, and the polenta was delicious and creamy. And again, this roasted eggplant puree, I've had it before from him. I think we had it last time at Royal Tea. He roasts these eggplants. They're literally burnt. And it's not like you're tasting, you know, ash, but it's got this really deep, roasty, earthy flavor. And again, it's one of those things where you can take something as simple as an eggplant and make it taste like something else. And that's where someone like Ludo just kind of shines, because he can do those things with the ingredients. They had two desserts on the menu. We ordered both of them. A dark chocolate souffle, and then a strawberry dish with strawberry macaroons and a strawberry chantilly. It's just ridiculous. I mean, everything's sweet. I mean, Ludo is one of these guys that can really bake. I've always kind of seen him as more of a savory person, but that's wrong. He's an excellent pastry chef, and I don't know how he does this stuff. Of course, he's a professional chef, but when I make souffle, I'll get it to rise, but it won't stay risen. It'll actually sink a little, and by the time I get it to the table, you're literally eating kind of like a big moist cake. But his souffle, it rose, stayed risen, and when you got to the inside, it wasn't like a cake. It was like this chocolate fudgy stuff. That was delicious. Just fantastic. But that's Ludo. Once again, you know, he pops up, he makes these delicious stuff for about 3-4 weeks, then he disappears, and he pops up again somewhere. This place, Grom and Papa's, interesting. It's in the Garment District of Los Angeles. And, of course, it's one of these places that's only open for breakfast and for lunch. And they close because, you know, the Garment District basically closes down. So we get there a little early. We figured, oh, we'll go find a bar, get a drink before dinner. Well, we couldn't find a bar because we're basically in no man's land. We drove around this place, around the corner from Grom and Papa's. Mind you, nice place. It's in the Garment District, so it's nice. But when the Garment District kind of goes to sleep, homeless people come out. There was this guy standing in front of these boxes. Literally, the boxes were set up like a big house, and he was sitting in front like the hotel manager. Like, do you want to rent a box? That type of thing. And we're laughing because it's kind of funny to see how people kind of adapt. But one of the funniest things was, we're driving down the street. I swear to God, I saw a cat taking a duke in the middle of a street. I told Katrina, I go, I just saw a cat taking a duke. She goes, no way, it's a street. You know, cats are very private. And she's right, they are private. But this cat is a city cat. He's not going to go in the dirt. There is no dirt. You're in the city. So I said, I know that was a cat. We turned around. We drove back down that street. The cat was gone, but what he left was not. So it was, I saw a lot of things I didn't think I'd ever see before that night. But it was really interesting, and I would be interested to find out what breakfast and lunch was like at Grom and Papa's. In the Garment District, L.A., it's kind of an interesting place.
Oh, man, the way Vasquez is going, Mama better make some more of that moist cake.
So I haven't talked about Season 2 of Top Chef Masters much because, frankly, I think it's kind of weak. You know I love cooking competition shows. I love Top Chef. But when I'm watching these things, halfway through, I realize that I've picked up my magazine or I'm reading my book or I'm checking my email. I know I'm kind of bored. And the only show that was worth watching, at least so far. Now, mind you, I'm only judging this based on what I've seen so far. It might get great. But the only one worth watching was the show that featured Ludo. he came back with a bunch of people from the first season, and they let them compete again. Wiley Dufresne was in there, a bunch of other guys, and he lost again. But it wasn't that he lost that made it so painful to me. It was how he lost, or better yet, why he lost. Bravo loves to tie in other shows. They love to do tie-ins with their shows, with other shows, and with sponsors. And that's okay. That's fine. But when they roll in the Real Housewives of Orange County as judges of top-tier chefs, I found it a little insane. Now, I want you to listen to some of this. I'm going to play some audio for you. Mind you, these women are plastic surgery nightmares. They're dumb as a bag of rocks. They've got big fake titties. Their faces are all frozen. And to those of you out in the Midwest or the East Coast, when you see this show, know that this is not the Orange County I live in. I mean, it is, but it's not. This is more like the Real Housewives of Cota de Casa. All right, that's out in the hills. It's out in Moneyville. And that's not where I live. It's not even close. So the chefs have to pair a dish with a cocktail. All right? And they bring out these Botox-faced floozies, right, to judge their dishes and to judge how they pair with the cocktails. And they don't understand what they're eating. One of them changes their mind after hearing one of the judges say something opposite of what she said. She goes, oh, yeah, that's what I think. Listen to this hot mess. And when they get to Ludo's pork dish, that's when the real fun begins.
Let's get our drink on.
These are real housewives, right?
Ooh la la.
Gals, welcome to Top Chef Masters. So you ready to try some cocktails and food? Wine always goes really good with food. Yeah. That's why I'm excited to try them. The martinis with the pairing, that's cool.
Do you usually drink cocktails and have food at the same time?
Well, when I'm with these girls,
she's like, I know.
Anytime, it's a good time. Right?
Oh, you're the great judges.
Sure. So the dish I'm serving is Arctic Char with lentils, bacon, crispy potatoes, and a little bit of lemon yogurt.
Oh my God, to die for. Mm-hmm. I think the pairing is amazing.
I love it.
Good job.
Yeah, let's see what the one with the hat says.
I don't know. There's something about eating kind of a sweet malt cider-like drink with fish.
I agree.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You can't change your mind.
I did a pork tenderloin and poblano-stuffed shrimp with avocado butter.
The pork is so perfectly cooked.
Pork isn't really something I eat much of. Uh-huh. Not my favorite.
You know what we say in New York? Oy vey.
That's all right.
Thank you.
What I make to go with the ginger figgle is a mussel custard flavored with kefir lime and figs.
I love the texture of the custard and the mussel taste.
I think it's good. Do you like ginger?
No.
Was there ginger in the cocktail that you think kind of brought that out?
Is there ginger in the cocktail?
Yes.
Oh, see, I don't taste it there, but I was chewing it there.
If you don't like ginger, you're not going to like that dish.
I'm serving a cream biscuit berry shortcake. Mm.
The dessert is fabulous.
Yeah, yeah, this is frozen yogurt, right?
This is on my Weight Watchers.
I don't know.
It's really good. It's like having two desserts, though, I think. It's so delicious.
They're going from dessert to raw fish. They ain't psyched.
The dish is a crudo of black cod with an edamame and red onion salad.
Entamami. Entamami?
Edamame.
Edamame.
That's fine.
The red onion's pretty strong.
You have to have a strong stomach.
I think that the fish works well with that. I like it a lot.
A green and based some pork chop and butter with some rosemary and thyme and garlic.
And the ginger's not overpowering, so it's really good.
Between the almonds and the ginger, it's maybe too much.
This is kind of sweet. Yeah. It's not really something I'd pair with pork.
We don't want to talk anymore, the girl now. I was scared to be judged against these people. They really have no idea what the f*** they're talking about.
I don't really eat red meat, so I don't know if I'm a good judge.
That's scary.
It's good. I mean,
it's good.
She's eating pork, and she says, I really don't like red meat. Holy shit, that's rich. Dummy. So this guy, Rick Moonen, he and Ludo are going at it, definitely for show. It's all drama. But Moonen comes off as a real cocky nemesis. It's easy to root for Ludo here, all right? So it actually plays into Ludo's hands. And they've got to cook famous pub food. with their own take on it. And Moonin and Ludo both want the fish and chips. But Ludo, being the gentleman, gives it to Moonin, which leaves him with Irish stew. But Moonin is the king of cooking fish, so it's not really fair that he takes fish and chips.
To stay in good spirits, we're going to the pub.
Cool.
More drinking.
Your challenge is to take a traditional pub dish, turn it upscale, and create something that you'd be proud to serve in your very own restaurant.
Pub food is delicious. It's cozy, it's comfortable, it's familiar. It's usually relatively low on vegetables, so that's always good with me.
Oh, no.
Here are the six classic pub dishes that you'll be choosing from. Bangers and mash, fish and chips, shepherd's pie, steak and kidney pie, toad in the hole, and Irish stew. Jonathan, since you won the quick fire, you get to choose first.
What I really love to do is shepherd's pie.
Shepherd's pie is off the table. The rest of you will need to decide amongst yourselves who gets what.
I want fish and chips. Can I get fish and chips?
Fish and steak too. Steak and fish and chips.
Ah, Ludo, let me do fish and chips.
The guy's a master of fish. You need to put him in this uncomfortable zone. I want Rick to take some meat. But Rick insists like a little child. I want my fish and chips. I want that. Okay, take it, bro. Take it.
Irish stew. You know, that's...
Well, I'm not Irish.
I'd like to do bangers and mash.
I was going
to
take bangers and mash.
You want bangers and mash? I
don't care. Man, there's a clip in here. I'm going to be saving this for the archives, Ludo.
I want Rick to take some meat.
Nice.
I want Rick to take some meat.
Anyway, Ludo made the Irish stew. It did not go well. He lost. And when he lost, I don't know. I just kind of lost interest. I'm still watching it, but my enthusiasm for the show is kind of meh, you know? So there's that. And, you know, if it gets good again, I'll talk about it. But right now, no. I talked about this before, this Culinary Historians of Southern California. They've got another event. Ann Willen is going to speak on old recipes in the kitchen. This Saturday, May 8th, 10:30 a.m., at the L.A. Public Library. It's at the Mark Taper Auditorium, just like before. It's at the Downtown Central Library in Los Angeles, 630 West 5th Street. It's free, open to the public. Ann Willen and her husband, Mark, have been collecting these antique cookbooks for a long time, and they've got a really nice collection. And they're going to speak at the L.A. Public Library this Saturday, and she's going to bring all these cookbooks and their recipes to life. And it's interesting because we talked about this last year with when we celebrated Julia Child's birthday. There's these cookbooks are really old, right? And then there are historical recipes that have ingredients that, you know, don't exist anymore. So she adapts these instructions and the recipes for the modern kitchen. And just like, you know, one of the things that one of the clips that we played of Julia, she said that she found old cookbooks to be windows into the past. So you could look at an old cookbook, and you can kind of tell what life was like then based on what they were able to cook with. And it's funny to see how we don't have those things anymore, how certain ingredients are just gone now, and we have ingredients that they didn't have back then. So, yeah, it's really kind of interesting. So if you're in the LA area, check it out.
So, folks, two outs, bottom of the fourth. Barzini's a pimp, could never have outfought Santino.
Okay, so you know Fine Living Network is going to turn into the Cooking Channel on Memorial Day, May 31st. And there's not a lot of information about this right now. They're just kind of filtering in a little bit at a time. They're running some promos, and it's kind of generic. I'm sure they're going to be leaking this stuff out quickly. As we get close to May 31st, you're going to know everything. What you should know now is that it's owned by Scripps, same company that owns Food Network. So it's going to be more of a Food Network 2 kind of a thing. And some of the shows that I know about, I don't know the descriptions, but there's a show called Unique Eats, Everyday Exotic, and Food Crafters. Just by those names alone, it just kind of sounds like they're trying to cover all the different gamuts. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of programming they have, you know, if it's going to be different than Food Network, or and how different. And I hope there's going to be some decent shows to watch. I was kind of hoping they'd bring back all the old stuff, all the old shows that they initially had when Food Network started, but I doubt they'll do that. And the one thing I hope they do not do is play a commercial like the one they played on Food Network recently. I'm not going to tell you what I was recording because I'm working on an intro for, you know, a future show. Listen to this thing. They ran this during a food show.
Hi, I'm 37.
63. I'm 7.
Occasionally, I have diarrhea,
constipation,
tummy troubles.
My doctor,
my mommy,
my pharmacist told me to try Culturelle Probiotic.
It made me feel wonderful.
Awesome. Human again.
And Culturelle even helps my immune system.
Only Culturelle contains Lactobacillus GG, the good bacteria, clinically shown to improve your digestive health to keep you healthy and strong. Plus, Culturelle strengthens your immune system.
Thank you, Culturelle.
Culturelle, I love you.
And now back to Cooking with Water in Tijuana with Chef Paco Jimenez. I mean, good Lord, that's nasty. You don't show that. If you show that commercial for poop medication, don't show it during a cooking show. I mean, seriously, man. Ugh. That's rough. I mean, suddenly, I'm no longer in the mood to watch Ina Garten make fudge. You know, right? But the interesting thing in that commercial, I'm not sure if you caught this.
Only Culturelle contains Lactobacillus GG.
Isn't that the same thing that you put in Belgian sour beers to make them tangy? You drop some of that poop medication right in your beer, you can make a Belgian sour. So, there's that. Hey, speaking of beer, my friend Mark sent me this article. It's about cask beer getting a high-speed upgrade with molecular cooking ingredients. There's this trick that they're doing to enable cask ales to be served on trains and aircraft and ships. Ale in a cask, you know, if you put beer in a cask, it takes about 2 days for it to settle after it's been traveling. All right, but this British brewer, Marston's, developed a cask beer that can be poured a minute after the barrel has been moved around. If you know anything about this, cask ale is basically real ale that's served from the vessel where it was fermenting. So it continues to ferment in the barrel until you start to serve it, you know, even while you're serving it. So this collagen, called isinglass, is usually added that turns the yeast into a gel-like mass, and it clarifies the beer. But it takes a long time for the beer to settle at the bottom of the barrel. So if you travel with it, if you move it around, it makes the beer cloudy, and you've got to wait for the yeast to get down and back to the bottom. But this guy, Richard Westwood, and he's the brewing director at Marston's in Wolverhampton in England, he's patenting this fast cask method of in-barrel fermentation that doesn't need time to settle. The beer is fermented in a large vessel, then this vacuuming device moves clumps of the yeast out before the beer is decanted into the barrels. Then they use powdered alginate. That's the same stuff that we use to make the caviar and a bunch of the pea ravioli, all those things that we made. Alginate was in those. And all that is an extract of seaweed. That's poured over the yeast, and that forms these little beads, these gel-like beads, that are added to the barrel. And these porous beads let the fermentation continue, but the alginate makes the mass sink right down to the bottom really quick. So the beer is ready to drink in like no time at all. Now, there's this organization, the Campaign for Real Ale. I think it's called Cambra or Camra. They're in UK, and they're the ones that decide whether or not these beers are considered real ales. Well, they're not sure if by doing this method that they're talking about, if it's still going to be able to be considered real ale, but it'll be interesting to find out how that works out. Okay, listen, that's all I've got for this week, kids. Please don't forget to check out Martin's site, ilovebluesea.com. Give sustainable fish a try. There's a lot of options for us out there that do not mean chewing through our resources in the sea. Keep your eyes peeled for a special video soon. You will not be sorry. It's going to be awesome. Thanks to FunnyOrDie.com and CNN for the audio clips. Music in this episode from Puddle of Mud. If you like the song, you can buy it from the iTunes Store or from their website, PuddleofMud.com. I'll put a link on the website, MyLifeAsAFoodie.com. You can check it out. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Cheers.
touch the monkey. So we'll go to the top half of the fucking whore. Fuck you, bitch.
Now, why don't you calm down, Steve? You didn't just see some guy's balls disappear inside your wife.
Good Lord.